Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Hey, what's up, you guys? I'm Catherine.
And I'm Haley.
And we are Saturdays Are for the Ghouls,
a podcast on the PodMoth Network.
We cover all things spooky, like horror movies, true crime, the supernatural, and spooky stories.
In the most chaotic way possible.
So join your favorite ghoul friends every Saturday, wherever you listen to podcasts. And become a spooky babe!
So spooky babes, we'll see you
in your nightmares!
Welcome to the Dead Podcast. I'm your host, Desi, and on this podcast, I discuss all things spooky and weird, from ghosts, demons, religion, to folklore, urban legends, true crime, and all things paranormal, with some horror movie reviews sprinkled in. So join me on this spooky ride.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. What are you going to be telling us about, Mom?
I am going to be telling you about a brutal murder with a bunch of lies happen, and then some people get murdered, and It's a family thing. So makes you kind of go, wow, I really don't want to have kids when you hear stories like this. So what are you going to be telling us about?
I'm going to be talking about the third wave experiment.
Third wave? Oh,
yeah,
interesting.
It's interesting. To go with it, I have the Blue Wave cocktail. 1 ounce of dry gin, 1 ounce of white rum, a half ounce of blue curacao, 3 ounces of pineapple juice, 1¾ ounce lime juice, and 0.75 ounce of simple syrup. Shake all ingredients in an ice filled shaker and pour over ice. You can garnish with a pineapple wedge if you'd like. Ready to give it a try?
I am. It's pretty. I didn't expect it to be this color of green. I actually really like the color.
Yeah, it's fun. I thought it was going to be bluer, but the pineapple juice.
Yeah, it really changes it to a nice green color.
That's not bad.
It's better than I thought it was going to be.
I mean, it's got a lot of pineapple juice in there, so
yeah.
You don't really see gin and rum used together, though.
No, that's what made me scared, was that there were three alcohols together, and some of those you don't typically see together. I mean, you see curacao and rum together a lot, but not with gin as well. Yeah. I got scared, but it's actually not bad. It's tangier than I thought it would be.
I've had worse.
Yes, we definitely have had worse.
All right, let's talk about the third wave.
Okay.
In 1967, high school history teacher Ron Jones was teaching his class about World War II. When Jones started teaching about the Nazis and how they behaved, one of his students had a very valid question. Mr. Jones, if the German people knew that they were doing something bad, why did they continue to do it? Mr. Jones thought about the question for a while and ultimately was stumped. Jones went home and thought about how he could show his students an example of this, and so he came up with the third wave experiment.
Oh, wow. This is going to be...
Yeah.
This sounds dark.
That's not super dark. It's really interesting, though.
Okay.
The next day, as the bell rang to indicate that Mr. Jones' history class was now in session, he began to explain the new project to his students. The goal of the experiment was to eliminate democracy because it conflicted with basic human nature. Jones started by rearranging the seating charts to be more proper, basically separating friend groups and cliques.
Okay.
He then wrote the experiment's motto on the chalkboard: strength through discipline, strength through involvement. He then announced a set of rules for the experiment. Students were expected to be sitting at attention, they had to stand up to ask questions, and had only 3 words or fewer for the question.
Oh.
And the students had to start their question with Mr. Jones before they could ask it.
Okay, so...
So kind of like some military-style stuff.
Yeah. So does Mr. Jones count as two of the words?
No.
Because that's going to be a real short question. Mr. Jones...
Hi.
Hi, exactly. What are you going to do with that? 3 words? Nope.
Mr. Jones was going to wrap it up after he showed his students how easily they followed his instructions. However, he decided to continue the experiment past the first day. When the students came in the following day, instead of slowly filing into their seats, like as the bell rang, they were all sitting at attention in their desks with like when the bell rang, which was the first rule Jones had set up.
Okay.
On the chalkboard sat their motto, only today it had an extra line: strength through community. He started the class by developing a salute, which involved a cupped hand over the opposite shoulder.
Okay.
Not like a Nazi salute or anything.
Not a Hail Hitler.
Yeah.
Okay, one question. Did he tell them that this was an experiment or that he was teaching them something?
Called it a project.
Oh, a project. But...
Yeah, as they were learning about.
Did they know that these rules were part of the project, or did he just approach it as, hey, we're going to be doing project. Oh, and by the way, we're changing some things about how classes run. Because you could see that maybe they're not together and wouldn't associate them. I wonder.
It didn't say how he introduced it. I think it was more like, we're going to do a project where we're going to change things up a little bit.
Okay.
When the class was nearing end, Jones gave his class some homework. His instructions were to salute your classmates in and outside of class, create a banner for the third wave, stop non-participating students from entering the class, and recruiting friends to join the third wave.
Oh, okay.
As the bell rang and the third wave filed out of the classroom with the homework he had assigned, it seemed to work because the next day his original class of 30 students had grown to 43.
Oh.
So 13 other people joined the movement and sat in his class.
Okay.
The 3 lines of motto were now joined by a fourth saying strength through action. So the full motto at this point was strength through discipline, strength through involvement, strength through community, and strength through action.
Okay.
During the class, Joan passed out membership cards and instructed the students on how to initiate new students. Jones elected 3 students to be a sort of police and to report to him if any of the members of the third wave broke any of their rules.
Okay.
He was surprised when about 20 students came to him with reports of members breaking the rules. So instead of the three students that
Everybody's tattling.
That we're supposed to. Yeah, everybody's tattling. He was even more surprised when he learned his small class of 30 had amassed 200 members by the end of the third day.
Holy shit.
Yes. It's been like a wildfire.
Okay, I will say this, though. If you told a high school student that they could get out of one class to go do a project in another class, they're going to be like all over it.
True.
I mean.
But 200 people, that's a lot.
Yeah.
A student even volunteered to be Mr. Jones' bodyguard. Yeah. Jones never expected this experiment to work so well, so he decided to hatch a plan to end it. On the fourth day, Mr. Jones announced that this was all a national experiment, which it wasn't, and a president of the third wave would be chosen the following day.
Oh.
He arranged for all of the students to meet in the auditorium where the president would be announced. Along with his announcement, Jones picked four students to choose three students that did not join the third wave. These three students would be banished to the library and not allowed into the auditorium for an assembly.
Okay. So they tried to recruit these people, and these people were like, nah, I'm not doing it.
I'm not interested.
I'm going to stay in my algebra class.
Into the library.
Okay.
Yeah. The following day, Mr. Jones invited some of his friends to the school and dress up as reporters so the students would believe it was a national event.
As the
whole school sat facing Mr. Jones and a rolling TV, Mr. Jones began the assembly by shouting the third wave motto. Strength through discipline, strength through involvement, strength through community, and strength through action.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Jones walked over to the TV to seemingly announce the third wave president. When he turned on the TV, all anyone could see was static. Mr. Jones seemed confused for a moment before explaining that this was all an experiment in fascism and all of his students had gone through the steps that the Germans had gone through in World War II.
Oh.
So it's not a fucked up experiment. He was just trying to show them, like, kind of how all that culminated into the Nazi Party.
And how easily everybody just did what they were told.
Got tricked and shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
But it was super weird. It seemed to be very effective. I mean,
I would love to hear, were there any interviews of the students who were involved?
Yes, but they did it like when they were adults years later. Jones wrote a book about the whole experiment.
Okay.
Included some of the interviews, and there's also a documentary that was made about it, I believe.
Really? Oh, I'd love to watch that.
Super weird.
I want to see that because I want to hear what their reactions were to being played like that, so to speak. You know? I mean, wow. That's interesting.
So the documentary is called Lesson Plan, and it's got interviews of the students and also Mr. Jones.
Okay.
So yeah, if anyone wants to watch that, you can rent it for $2 on Prime.
I'm definitely going to pay that $2 and go watch it because that sounds really interesting. I'm glad it didn't get dark.
No.
I thought it was going to get dark.
I thought it was just a cool little story.
It is really
doesn't get dark. It could have gotten very dark, but
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I dig it. I like it. Okay. Well, are you ready for me to tell you a dark story? Because I have a dark story. Okay. So in the late night hours of November 8th, 2010, a young woman in Toronto, Canada, in one of the suburbs, calls 911. She's very upset and says that her house has been broken into by three men. She lives with her parents and believes that they have been shot. Police respond to discover that both her parents have been indeed shot. The mother has died and from her injuries, but the father is still alive. The young woman is Jennifer Pan, and she is 24 years old. So a fully formed, functioning adult is what I'm saying. She's, yes, I said she's a young woman, but she's not a child. She's an adult. So let's look at who Jennifer Pan is and what her family was like. She was born on June 17, 1986 to both to her mother, Bic, and father, Han. Both parents were Vietnamese immigrants who started new lives in Canada. Jennifer also had a younger brother. When Jennifer was younger, she was involved in music, taking piano lessons regularly, and also playing the flute. She was involved in sports. She had hopes of becoming an Olympic figure skater until she suffered a severe knee injury. The parents were strict with high expectations for their children, both in and out of school. They were described as quote-unquote tiger parents, with the dad, Han, being the leader. Tiger parenting is a term often used for parents who are very strict and largely invested in their child's success, often forcing them to participate in activities that they are not interested in and preventing them from doing things of their own choosing. So, you know, there's strict parents out there, which is one thing. I grew up in a pretty strict household, but, you know, by some people's comparison, but definitely not as strict as other people's. So I get that, but the tiger parenting goes to the point of being like, you have to be in these kind of classes and you have to do these kind of extracurricular activities, and then pushing them to the point where they, you know, either succeed or they burn out or, you know, something happens. So Jennifer was in that kind of family. She wasn't permitted to socialize with friends outside of school and was restricted to activities only approved by her parents. Jennifer was encouraged to take classes in high school that didn't go well, and that led to some deceit. Because she was getting average grades, but that wasn't acceptable in her family, she started forging her report cards so that it looked like she was getting straight A's.
Oh.
Yeah. She was urged to take calculus, but she ended up failing that class, which means that she didn't graduate high school. And her admission to college was rescinded. However, she needed to keep up appearances, so she told everyone she was attending classes and getting good grades. She told everyone that she was in college and taken all these different classes, and she hadn't even graduated high school, so she couldn't be in college.
Jeez, she's fibbing.
Yes, a bunch of big fibs. She even told her parents that she earned scholarships and was admitted to pharmacy school. So it wasn't bad enough that she's like, yeah, I'm in college, but now I'm going to graduate school and I've, you know, done all this stuff to get scholarships, and she doubled down on her lies to make things look real. She created notebooks of class notes so that she could show her parents. She like purchased secondhand textbooks and then would write down notes to make it look like she was actually sitting in class, taking notes, and doing all this stuff so that she could show her parents.
It's just the same amount of work as just going to school at that
right.
point.
Right.
You're still taking notes that are just fake. I mean.
Right. School was not the only thing that Jennifer was lying about. She had a boyfriend, Daniel Wong, who she had met in high school. However, her parents didn't approve of him, and it became a point of contention in the family. Whether the issue was his ethnic background or the fact that he was known to sell marijuana, The parents did not want Jennifer dating him. They did not like him at all. The two continued their relationship in secret for some time, but eventually Wong broke it off due to Jennifer's parents. He was tired of basically lying to everybody, her lying to her parents being so strict. He was like, this is too much work. I don't want to date you anymore. And that was not what Jennifer wanted. He was dating somebody else after he broke up with her, and it upset her a lot. You know, first of all, her parents get in the way, and now he's moved on and has a new girlfriend. She's like, I can't have this. So she went so far as to lie about the new girlfriend orchestrating an attack on her. She said that, like, somebody broke into her house and assaulted her and did all these things to her. And she told her ex-boyfriend, your new girlfriend is the one who instigated it all, and it's all her fault. So
Jesus, this bitch lies about everything.
Yes, she does. Losing her boyfriend might have been what caused Jennifer to turn to drastic measures. In the spring of 2010, she started talking to people about killing her parents. Though her ex-boyfriend, Daniel Wong, she, through using him, she connected with three men who would later be tied to the death of her mother and the attempted murder of her father. Those men were Eric Carty, I'm going to get this last name wrong, David Milvaganum, sorry if I mispronounce that, but and Lenford Crawford. She met them because Daniel Wong knew Lenford, I believe it was, and he connected everybody else all together. Jennifer and Wong planned to move in together once her parents were dead and she inherited their money. She believed she would inherit around $500,000 upon their deaths. But first, she had to be free of the parents that wanted her to go to school and have a career and not date a man that they didn't find worthy, but that she loved. She was like, oh, how dare you want a life for me that I don't want? And so her answer was, I know, I'll just have my parents killed. So the basic plan, the basic plan for the crime was to stage a home invasion with the three men that would result in both parents being killed. So on November 8th, 2010, Jennifer texted the group to start the process, and she unlocked the front door to the house. The three men came into the home, stole some cash, but left some other high dollar items behind. They took the parents to the basement and shot them. Jennifer was then tied to the stair banister before the men left. She used her cell phone to call 911 and report the attack. Police initially believed her, but some of the things weren't adding up. If it was a home invasion robbery, why were expensive items left behind? And why, if they were willing to kill two people, did they leave another one alive? 3 days later, Jennifer's dad woke up from a coma. So he had been in a coma this whole time. They couldn't interview him. So all they're going on is Jennifer's story about these three guys breaking into the house and all these things and her getting tied up. And when her dad woke up, police interviewed him and he's like, yeah, that's not how it happened. So he told the police that he watched Jennifer walking through the house with one of the men, and they were talking in a quiet manner. She was not restrained in any way at that time, and she acted like she knew them. She was friendly with them. She didn't seem scared or anything like that. Police confronted her, and she switched her story, claiming that she had hired the men to kill her, not her parents. So her story now is that she hired these guys essentially to, in an effort to commit suicide. But she said, like, I didn't want them to kill my parents. That story didn't last long, though, and they were soon determined that she was actively part of the scheme. Her phone records showed that she had been planning the whole thing. She had offered to pay the men $10,000 for the murder of her parents. You know, she thinks she's getting $500,000, so $10,000, okay. Jennifer was arrested 2 weeks after the phony home invasion. She and her co-conspirators were charged with murder and attempted murder. The trial concluded in 2014 for Jennifer and her boyfriend, Daniel Wong, as well as two of the three home invaders, Crawford and Milviganum. Cardi, the third man, was given a mistrial because his lawyer became ill during the original trial, so they tried him separately. And he later pleaded guilty to the attempted murder charge and was given an 18-year sentence, but he later died in prison. The others were given life sentences with no parole for 25 years. However, in 2023, the Ontario Appeal Court ordered a retrial on the murder charge, but they let the attempted murder charge stand as well as the sentence for the attempted murder charge. The prosecutor filed an appeal to this ruling, and it is still pending. So at this time, it looks like there's going to be another trial for the mother's murder, but there is an appeal on that. So it might that the retrial might get put off, and they might just stand with the original conviction. It's all still pending at this point. So who knows? Either way, they're still in jail for the attempted murder on the father. And the father and Jennifer's brother were able to get no contact orders and restraining orders against her. So they haven't had any communication with her or anything like that. She has maintained her innocence the entire time and isn't admitting to anything. Yeah.
And you said she's out now?
No, she's still in prison. They're all still in prison because of the attempted murder charge. So the appeal happened because they said that the original trial judge only gave the jurors two options in the murder charge. It kind of sounded like her ultimate goal was to have the father killed. I mean, she wanted both of them killed, but it sounded like they were saying that the father was the primary target, mom was secondary target. And so when the trial judge didn't say that the jury could find lesser offenses like murder two or manslaughter in the mother's death, that he committed an error doing that. So that's why the appeal court overturned the conviction for murder. But because there was the attempted murder of the father, they just kept that. And so they're all still sitting in prison for the attempted murder, but they're going to try and go after him again for the murder charge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to get a murder charge.
So, I mean, like I said, definitely makes you think twice about going, I should have children and be strict with them. And I don't know. Yikes.
Yikes.
Yeah. Do you have a chaser?
I do. My chaser is an Instagram account called _sensationalsandwiches.
Oh.
And yeah, the name's pretty spot on. He makes like sandwiches I don't even know how he thought of, but he makes like, he has a series where he makes a sandwich from around the world. So I'll make one from like each country and things like that. So we'll do like a bento style sandwich.
Oh, like I love it.
A Cubano. It's pretty good.
I love sandwiches. I like to watch it
late at night and make myself hungry.
Yeah. I'm going to go follow it and get some ideas.
Yeah. And he has good filmography, I guess. The way he films it is just very pleasing. So
nice.
It's a nice little find some inspiration from that.
Yeah, definitely. I like trying new things.
What's your chaser?
My chaser is a watch recommendation for the show Mayor of Kingstown. And it's got Jeremy Renner in it. And we just started watching season 2, and season 3 is going to be coming out in about a week and a half. So it's a good show set in Michigan and in a pretend city in Michigan, but the family, he's not the actual mayor, but he runs like the show in the town. So they call him the mayor, and he's like involved with prison life and all sorts of shady, illegal activities inside and outside of the prison. And it's, yeah, kind of like organized crime meets prison warden kind of situation. It's a good show. It's a drama and good act, nice. A bunch of great actors and everything in it. So
I'm gonna have to check that out.
Yeah, it's a good.
Well, that just about wraps us up.
It brings does. Us
to the end of this episode. Thanks for watching, everybody.
Thanks Love for listening. Mom. Love you, bud.
All right, bye.
Bye. Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.